Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Creating a culture of emotional safety in the workplace. Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter. You are joining us here today, Saturday, July 4th, for day two of our management article for the month of July. It is called Trauma-Informed Leadership: Why Emotional Safety is a Measurable Business Advantage. Trauma-Informed Leadership. So we will be going through this article, the second day of it. We're talking about the ideas in it, even more though, talking about the vocabulary in it, give you a chance to practice your English here, some spoken English. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist coming back for day number two. Please welcome back Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Peter. Hello, everybody. Great to be back.
And it's good to have Rebecca back for this very interesting article. Rebecca and I were agreeing off the air that there's a lot here to think about, a lot to discuss, and a lot that I think needs to be discussed. Just briefly, Rebecca, what do we mean by trauma-informed leadership?
So trauma-informed, we talked yesterday about trauma. Trauma is usually a bad experience that leaves a big scar in you. So if you have trauma-informed leadership, it just means that leaders are aware that many people have trauma in their lives.
Right.
And when you have trauma in your lives, you come to work. That's part of who you are. That's part of like how you act. So it's not just something we have to talk about when you're talking about families or dating. This is actually really important for work. And I think this kind of topic is just not something that we usually talk about. Like, mm-hmm. I never even heard the word trauma literacy until today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have an expression from yesterday's trauma literacy. Normally, literacy means simply your ability to read printed language. But in this case, it means somewhat similarly, your ability to read people's trauma or to understand that they may have trauma, to be aware of that in terms of how you deal with them. And Rebecca, why do you think we need articles like this? Why is it that emotional safety, at least in the workplace, is something that needs to be taught? Why isn't it just there?
Because I think a lot of times we treat people like they're robots.
Mm.
Like, what I mean is, like, we come to work and then people just measure us by our performance.
Mm.
Like, you know, do you get the job done? Are you efficient? Are you good at what you do? But we forget that a person is not a robot.
Mm.
A person is a human being with emotions and feelings and experiences. And if they're not emotionally well, they're not going to perform very well.
Right.
They will be performing at a discount.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this person has ability to do 100%. They can only give 60% because they're emotionally not well.
Exactly.
And a lot of times we can't tell. A lot of times if you don't look for it, you might think that person, how are you? Like, you know, in the Western world, we always say, how are you?
Yeah.
It's one of the silliest and most, I mean, that's how we open up most conversations. But how are you is we don't want to hear the answer.
Right, right.
Like, we don't want to hear a person say, oh, I'm having a horrible day. No. All I want to hear is Peter's telling me, well, I'm doing great. How about you? Like, that's all. Like,
yeah,
I don't want
yeah.
Peter saying I had a horrible day.
Yeah.
But maybe we really need to, like, try to understand how people, what are that person's emotions? Because that way, then we can deal with them more effectively while we're at work.
Right, right. And one of the big points related to that the article made yesterday is that we do not need to know someone's history to be mindful of trauma's effects. The article is not calling business people to become psychologists and psychotherapists. We just need to be aware of this dimension in our employees, in our coworkers. Like you said, we're not robots. We are human beings. And human beings have these messy emotions sometimes that can make things a little bit more complicated, but pulling back to the pure business perspective, we saw yesterday this Harvard Business Review study found that employees who feel psychologically safe in their workplace, psychologically safe, emotionally safe, show a 76% increase in engagement, a 50% increase in retention, meaning they stay at the job, and a 67% increase in referrals, telling other people about the job. So there is nothing but a practical gain here for a business if they are able to create a culture of emotional safety. And so we'll read more about that here in the second day of our article. The author spends most of the time giving specific practices and advice on how to create this culture of emotional safety in your workplace. So let's go right into it now. We'll do two readings today and begin with our first reading.
Here are trauma-informed practices any manager can implement. 1. Acknowledge feelings. Start meetings with an honest check-in, not a general, "How's everyone doing?" but "How are you, truly?" Emotions offer real-time information about morale. Of course, people won't open up just because you ask a deeper question. You need to create the conditions where it feels safe to answer honestly. That starts with you. As a manager, model emotional transparency in small, low-risk ways. Say things like, "I'm feeling a bit scattered today, but I'm here," or "I had a tough morning, so I might be quieter than usual." This signals that real emotions, not just polished updates, are welcome. 2. Don't try to fix them. Once someone shares something vulnerable, don't rush to fix it or dismiss it. Just reflect it back. "Thanks for sharing that. I hear you." Or, "That makes a lot of sense." From there, you might ask, "Is there anything you need from me today?" Or, "Would it help to adjust your workload this week?" You don't need to solve every emotional need. Trauma literacy isn't about absorbing everyone's pain. In fact, it's the opposite. Effective leadership requires responding to emotions without becoming consumed by them.
Okay, so the first practice that the author presents, and which she says practice any manager can implement, a big word that just means to put into practice, to create, practice that any manager can implement, a trauma-informed practice, is 1, acknowledge feelings. And Rebecca, this calls right back to what you were just saying about how we love in the West to begin meetings or just personal meetings by saying, "How are you?" But what's the difference here?
Well, when we say, "How are you?" we don't want to hear the real response. We just want people to always say, "Oh, I'm doing great," you know. But here they want, people won't open up because, unless you ask deeper questions. So here it says, when we ask, "How are you?" like you really want to listen. So how are you really doing?
Right, right.
How are you really doing today? And it's not more like just a simple, like, flaky, "How are you?" Like,
right.
We want, how are you really doing? And I think maybe the Europeans in some ways, especially the Scandinavian countries, are better than us at this.
Hmm.
Because I mentioned briefly, I worked in a company for under a year. I had a European boss. She was Danish. And the way she asked me, I was like always kind of just paused. She would say, "So how are you really doing?"
Hmm.
"So how are you doing?" Hmm. And then she would look me in the eyes, and then she would just pause, waiting for me to say my real condition. And I think that was very, very wise of her. And I think that came from this Scandinavian, maybe Nordic kind of environment where they are more holistic than we are.
Hmm. I didn't know that about Scandinavia. That's interesting.
And that's why they're always in the top 10 when you talk about the happiest countries in the world.
Yeah,
it's always
yeah.
like Finland, Denmark, Sweden, Iceland,
yeah.
Norway. They're always very high up there.
Yeah, that always, it's true. Every time I hear about, you know, the happiness of a particular culture, a particular country, it's usually the Scandinavian countries that are near the top or right at the top. And I always wonder about that because I'm thinking, but, you know, that close to the Arctic Circle, they have so little sunlight. You know, I mean, there's great beauty up there, don't get me wrong, but I would just think having so little sunlight, and yet, year after year, they do score up there. And I imagine it may have something to do with what you're talking about, this sense of a greater culture of emotional safety and care for people's emotions. And I would say that even putting this step into practice, acknowledging feelings, you can say something as simple as, how are you doing? The author says, maybe you should say, how are you truly? You could do that. But I think if you say, how are you, as long as you mean it, as long as you say it in a way in which it's not just like, hey, buddy, how are you? Anyway, I had something for breakfast today. In which how are the subtext, you know, the meaning behind the words is simply, hello, I'm going to start talking now.
Exactly.
But if you can convey, how are you, and I want to know how you are, then I think you could use that just as easily as any other
expression. How are you truly?
How are you truly?
So,
don't hold anything back, tell me. It depends. It's the heart that you put into it. It's not just in the language. And the author makes the point that this sort of question gives you real-time information about morale. Good word there, morale. It's not marked in your article, but morale means the level of confidence and positive feelings that people have. The baseball team morale was low on the team after they lost the first game of the championship. So the manager needed to rally them and boost morale so that they would perform better for the rest of the championship series, that sort of thing, in sports and obviously also in an office. And then the author makes the point that realistic approach here, people won't just open up and reveal their deep emotions to you just because you ask a deeper question. You need to create the conditions in which it feels safe to answer honestly, create the conditions, another way of saying create a culture where it feels safe to answer honestly, talk about emotions. And that starts with you. And she goes on to say that a manager should model what, Rebecca?
Emotional transparency. So we know when something is transparent, like if I'm wearing a transparent shirt, it's see-through. So something that's transparent is you can clearly see what's inside. So emotional transparency just means that you can let people see what your true emotions are.
Right, and you can say things like, it starts with you, so always you're the manager in this case, you're the leader, so you set the example and you say, you can ask, how are people doing, how are you feeling, and then answer your own question. I'm feeling a bit scattered today, but I'm here. Scattered, just a word meaning not thinking clearly, not focused, my mind, I'm a little preoccupied with something, I'm feeling a little bit scattered today, but I'm here. Or I had a tough morning, so I might be quieter than usual. We're not looking for deep, dark revelations, like I was thinking about, when I lost my dear dog so many years ago. Nothing. You may be, and I don't mean to make light of that, but just that what the author is advising here is not a therapy session, but just a little more talk about emotions than we normally give to emotions in the workplace. This signals, she concludes by saying, that real emotions, not just polished updates, are welcome. A polished update, that would be like if someone says, how are you? Really great. I'm just great today. That's probably a polished update more often than not. And then practice number two, don't try to fix them. And this was the most reassuring one for me personally, because that's always my temptation. If someone is hurting or in trouble in some way, I want to fix them, I want to help them not feel bad because that makes me feel good. But the author says, don't try to fix them. Once someone shares something vulnerable, Rebecca, what?
Don't rush to fix or dismiss. So first, Peter, your tendency is to fix it. We also can't dismiss it.
Right.
Because sometimes we think, oh, that person just be stronger. Why can't they get past it?
Yeah.
They broke up for 2 years. Get past
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Dismiss just means you treat it as not important. Don't dismiss it either. But just reflect it back. So you reflect it back here. It gives an example. Just say, thanks for sharing that. I hear you. I hear you in English. It just means I really heard what you're saying, and it's noted in my mind.
Yeah.
Or that makes a lot of sense. So you just show agreement with what they just said. I agree with your feelings. I might not agree that you still can't get past that bad boyfriend, but at least I can agree that you have that bad feeling right now.
Right, right. Yeah, this is the sort of whole point of this step is that you don't need to solve every emotional need. Again, you don't need to be their therapist. You can still just be their manager at work. You can still just be their boss or even their coworker. Trauma literacy, she writes, isn't about absorbing everyone's pain, taking it on to yourself. Taking on the responsibility for their pain onto yourself. No, 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 no. In fact, it's the opposite. It's just the opposite. Effective leadership requires responding to emotions without being consumed by them. So yeah, just acknowledging them. That takes us back to the first step, acknowledging emotions, creating a culture where people can talk about emotions, and then, you know, after work, they'll go and see their therapist or their special friend that they talk about deeper issues with. But at least in the workplace, they'll know that they can talk about their emotions and be understood, and that is a place of emotional safety. Okay, we've got two more steps here that the author recommends to create this culture of emotional safety, so let's go into our second reading.
Three, ask simple, effective questions. The 5W1H method is another great way to explore challenging moments. It stands for six simple but powerful questions to ask. What, why, when, where, who, and how? For example, what part of this task felt unclear? Or, when did you start feeling stuck? These open-ended prompts help team members reflect and problem solve without feeling interrogated or blamed. Four, check how people are feeling. Trauma literacy isn't a one-off conversation. It's a culture. Build in rituals for reflection. Adjust workloads proactively and allocate time and resources towards psychological safety. That might mean adding 5-minute emotion checkouts at the end of meetings, especially after intense sprints, high-stakes conversations, or moments of team transition where each person shares how they're leaving. Energized, drained, hopeful, unsure, etc. If multiple people are feeling anxious or exhausted, that's a signal to adjust pace, revisit priorities, or check in one-on-one.
All right, so for step number three here, ask simple, effective questions. We have a little code to remember this step. Rebecca, what is that code?
The 5W1H. So here we're taking the first letter of each of the words. So what, why, when, where, who. So that's the 5 W's. And the 1H, the H is how. And this is like simple asking questions. Like we learned this in English class when we were young. Peter, you said you learned this when you took journalism classes.
Yes.
So this is a 5W1H. This is actually good for reporters. It's good for any person wanting to ask questions. Like you ask who, what, where, when, how.
Right. And the point is to ask questions, to help people express their emotions and understand that they're in a place of emotional safety through these simple questions. What, why, when, where, who, and how. She gives examples. What part of this task felt unclear? If somebody's struggling with a task, didn't get it done on time, you don't begin by saying, you got to get this done on time next time. You got to do better here. No. Start with a question. What part of this task felt unclear? Or when, another W, when did you start feeling stuck? Obviously, you know, even these questions can be misused. You don't want to be asking questions like, why are you so stupid? How long am I going to have to put up with your incompetence? You know, so questions are simple, and it's a good way to remember them, but we also want the intention behind them to still be creating a sense of emotional safety. These open-ended prompts, something that's open-ended, doesn't have a simple yes or no answer. It's something that is open and invites a more longer, more detailed answer. This helps team members reflect and problem solve without feeling interrogated or blamed, interrogated, meaning like the police, when they have the suspect in the crime, they take him into the little room and they interrogate him. You know, where were you on the night of January 16th? Whose fingerprints are on that gun? And all these questions. And the police need to do that. But at a workplace, it's not a police station. There's no crime that's been committed. You want to get information, you know, if there's been a problem of some sort. But you don't want people to feel like they're being interrogated. And starting with these simple, effective questions, the 5W1H method can be a way to do that. And then finally, step number four, check how people are feeling. And beginning there with a very important statement, which we've already touched on several times, but it bears repeating, trauma literacy isn't a one-off conversation, a one-off meaning something you have just once and then never again. It's a culture. And how, Rebecca, does the author advise us to build this culture?
So first it says build in rituals. So a ritual is basically kind of like a tradition. It's like a small tradition. So you have a ritual, like perhaps you have a ritual of always going home for dinner and eating with your family at 6:30. So that's a ritual.
Right.
So you build in rituals. And then what are these rituals for reflecting, to reflect?
Right.
And we'll give some examples in a minute. And then adjust workloads proactively. So if someone is saying, I can't take it anymore, I'm just so stressed out, I can't finish my job, then maybe as a manager, you have to examine their workload and see, can you reduce it?
Right.
Usually it's reducing it for people who are overstressed. And then allocate time and resources towards psychological safety. To allocate just means you have this set amount of resources. How do you divide it among the people?
Right.
So to allocate the time and resources, put some time and like maybe even put some money into making sure your employees feel safe emotionally. And then here we'll talk about what does that mean.
Right. And for example, the author says, what does that mean? It might mean adding 5-minute emotion checkouts at the end of meetings, especially after intense sprints, high-stakes conversations, or moments of team transition. A sprint, normally we think of that in track and field, where you run very fast for a short distance, the 100-meter sprint. Well, you can have sprints in the workplace, too, in which you work very hard and intensely for a short period of time. That's a sprint in a figurative sense. So when you've had a sprint, the author is saying, or when there's been a high-stakes conversation, like about whether we're going to hire this new person or whether you want to continue at the company or whatnot, or moments of team transition, you know, if you are, in fact, or if someone has decided to leave the company, after a meeting like that or after a sprint, just take 5 minutes, for an emotion checkout to check in on where people are feeling, going back to that first step, acknowledge feelings, so that you know where people are at emotionally. Again, you know, you don't have to have a psychological profile of the person with all their childhood and their relationship with their parents or everything. Just what are they feeling right now after this intense time or this high-stakes conversation, as it may be. And this way, you have a sense of where people are leaving that conversation or sprint. And it goes on to say, if multiple people are feeling anxious or exhausted, that's a signal to adjust pace, revisit priorities, or check in one-on-one. So, Rebecca, do you think this article at the end of the day is going to be helpful for potential managers or current managers?
I think it's really, really helpful to remember that people are not robots.
Yes.
That they are a whole package, and we can be very emotional, even though we might not show it. And then also just to have more grace to people. I think grace is what we need in the workplace. I'm all about efficiency. It's good to be efficient, but at the same time, we need to give people grace.
Yeah.
And I think here, I really like the advice that they're giving, especially number four, to check how people are feeling, especially when you've gone under intense period. Like maybe you have a really pressing deadline. Everyone is working really, really hard or working a lot of overtime. And, you know, just, and also here it talks about the moments of transition. Because now, you know, with the AI world, like as a media company, like we've had to race to keep up.
Yeah.
And I know we're not the only ones. I know everybody out there, you're probably also racing to keep up with AI. And sometimes it's kind of scary because we don't know how much AI will replace like parts of our job. And I think to let people know it's okay to feel unsure and that we're here for you is just really important.
Yes, yes.
So I think this article is super important, and I really hope that it gives us all better trauma literacy.
Yes.
Like, this is something new that I learned because of this article, but trauma literacy. We need to understand that people do have experiences that shape them. And if they're sometimes acting crazy or not fun, there might be reasons behind that.
Right. That could be fight, flight, freeze, or fawn.
Yes.
The four basic responses to stress or to trauma. Yeah.
Yes. And I hope that that's just not for managers to recognize it, also for any employee.
Yeah.
Like if you're dealing with a difficult colleague, difficult boss, like sometimes it's because they also have emotional baggage that they're carrying. Because all of us are carrying emotional baggage.
Yep.
It's just some people have huge emotional baggages and some people just have a little backpack.
Right.
Everyone's different.
Exactly. I love that. Some people have a huge trunk that they're carrying around. And
they
some
might
people,
have a whole truck.
Yeah, yeah. We've all got something, but, you know, it's different sizes. And yeah, just for me, that whole idea of creating a culture of emotional safety is not about trying to fix people or to heal them, but just allowing them to feel safe to express emotions like that. And, you know, and then we go back to focusing on why we're all here, you know, on making a better widget or on whatever our industry is, but just incorporating that into the work environment. Again, we're not talking about being better people here in some moral sense, although that is part of it. There is a practical business advantage. Remember that Harvard Business Review we read about at the end of day one? Your business will only stand to gain from how safe people feel emotionally in your business. Readers, we hope that we have indeed given you something to think about here, and we're thankful that you've joined us for these 2 days. That is it for our management article for the month of July. But come back again next time here on the radio broadcast, and we will have a new topic for you, new chance to practice your English. But for today, I'm Peter.
I'm Rebecca.
Saying, how are you feeling?
Feel well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.